Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 27th day of February, 2020. It's a Thursday. Yes, Thursday. That means you can smell Friday, or I'm doing cocaine off the microphone. Your choice. It's a safe bet. It ain't the blow, though. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, downloading, telling a friend, doing all that stuff. Supporting the show on Patreon, patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. So much going on. I want to answer some emails. I've been lax on responding to emails. I just went through a bunch, and some of the questions were good. Some of the points were good. So I thought I'd answer some of them on air as well, because I think I can expand upon other things going on. And it is CPAC. Today is the first day of CPAC. Hopefully, I don't know, I might have to go to a town hall reception on Friday, but I'm hoping to avoid it. Got friends in town, and, you know, CPAC is usually just meeting up with friends, but I'm seeing them tweeting on Facebook talking about how they feel like crap, and so I don't really want to see them. Certainly don't want to touch them. I wish them well from a distance. So, well, I'll see them and not touch them. Keep them away from me. The last thing, when you got kids, you got two petri dishes running around the house already. Somehow they get sick and they're not in daycare. I don't know where it comes from. And then they give it to us. So I'm going to avoid people like the plague as best I can. We'll talk about the plague, the coronavirus, as well, because the president gave his big press conference about it and made a point that doesn't really play well in the media. Yeah, it's never good when people get sick and die from a virus, but keep it in perspective. It has a low percentage rate of mortality, especially, and this is important, in the first world, where first world medical care exists, which, as much as we'd like to talk about, and the left likes to talk about China as an economic powerhouse, when it comes to things outside of things that don't require slave labor, and you know, they can put together an iPhone real cheap, real fast. But when it comes to medical developments and advancements and care, not so great. Not so great. It's so bad, actually, that I'm surprised Bernie hasn't cited it as an example of how this country should be. So we shall get to that. I'll play the audio from yesterday that I wanted to play but ran out of time about, of Ben Sasse, senator from Nebraska, making the case for the Infant Born Alive Act, the Abortion Survivor Act, that Democrats blocked. I told you yesterday and played the audio of how Elizabeth Warren, who had hours earlier voted against providing care, mandating doctors provide care for a baby, or as CNN put it, a fetus born alive. They want to deny care to it. So they want it to die. It's a botched abortion, and the left doesn't like to admit that there are botched abortions, that human beings are being aborted, and that human beings survive abortions. So the Democrats filibustered this bill, and then hours later at the debate stage, Elizabeth Warren was outraged that allegedly, like 30 years ago, Michael Bloomberg had told a pregnant woman that she should kill her baby. Like, oh, well, you just voted for exactly that. You actually voted for a post-birth abortion, a second bite. You know, double jeopardy, not good when it comes to the law, but double jeopardy is perfectly okay when it comes to abortion, apparently, according to Democrats. Ben Sasse obliterated that in a brilliant speech yesterday on the floor of the Senate, and we have the audio. Plus, we have some hilarious audio of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She went down to the floor of the House of Representatives to try to clear up misconceptions and present the truth about the Green New Deal. The truth nobody was asking. You know, it's, I have the answers to questions nobody is asking. I'm a hero. Just ask me. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, now our friends at Grabian cut together a little montage of her speech, if you can call that, and good chunks of her reading the Green New Deal resolution. You'll find very little in it related to the environment. The Green New Deal is simply a delivery device. That's what environmentalism is. It is a delivery device to impose a communist agenda, essentially. Just like when you give a dog a pill, you can't just give the dog the pill and you try and shove the pill down the dog's throat and the dog keeps bringing it up. You have to wrap it in hamburger or something, cheese, something the dog normally devours, because then the dog will devour the pill without even thinking about it. Well, that's what the Green New Deal is for communism. It's the hamburger that you wrap the medicine, the bad stuff in, to hide it, to obscure what's really going on. So we have that audio as well. Like I said, it's going to be a fun show. Also, a programming note, tomorrow is the interview edition of the program, which is good that it comes up on CPAC, because I'm going to have a busy day after I get to CPAC. I sat down with Yuval Levin of the American Enterprise Institute, a very smart guy. You get intimidated when you deal with smart guys. You just sit there. Like when Christopher Hitchens was alive, I was lucky enough to become friends with Christopher Hitchens. In college in the late 90s, I would love watching him, particularly on Hardball, when he would just dismantle Chris Matthews. Back when Chris Matthews was semi-sane. Or he would dismantle, insert random liberal. Or when he would appear on Real Time with Bill Maher and he would just destroy. Christopher was so smart and so fun. God, it was fun to go out drinking with Christopher. And he would just destroy anybody. He could just turn it on at a dime. He was very funny, dirty sense of humor, all of that stuff. But he was everything you wanted him to be if you were ever a fan of Christopher Hitchens. And it's a shame that he's not with us any longer. But when I talked to him, he was the only person I ever met and wanted to meet and sought out because I saw them on TV. And I was always afraid that he would think I was dumb. He never let on that he did anyway. But I was always really nervous because this guy could string together some of the most brilliant, well-constructed paragraphs, not only written, because you think, well, you just edit that together, you think long and hard, but no, in a conversation, he could just string, that's how he talked. When, he'd have a couple of drinks in him, he would talk that way. And I'd be sitting there going, just don't say anything stupid, Hunter. Don't screw this up. Don't make yourself into a moron. Don't let on. Don't let on. Keep him at bay. And with Yuval Levin, he's that kind of smart. And his new book is a very interesting read. There will be signed copies that you can enter to try to win. You might not like everything he has to say, but like I try to get, and the reason I bring people on the show, even if you don't agree with them, he makes you think. He forces you to think. And I like that in people. I don't care what you think. I just want you to think. I admire that. I try to think as much as I possibly can. And when I find somebody that makes me think, I want more. And yesterday's interview left me wanting, or tomorrow's interview, I recorded it yesterday, tomorrow's interview would leave you, at least left me wanting more. And that's why the book exists. So you can win a, get a chance to try and win a signed copy of that. So signed books are back, baby. Yeah, so there you go. As far as the emails or email complaints about the F-bomb, apparently I dropped an F-bomb this week. I don't really remember it. I think I vaguely do. Something about Bernie Sanders and my kids and daycare. I know, I get it. I don't swear very frequently on the show, and when I do, it is for impact. It is for effect. It is because it is, I don't do it. I mean, I could just string this together like, you know, it was an Andrew Dice Clay show, but I don't, because my dad would not approve, for one. But when I do swear, it is to make a point. And if you use vulgarities regularly, nonstop, willy-nilly, like a monkey flinging poo, they have no impact. But if you use them sparingly, for effect, they do have effect. Because I bet you remember, probably better than I do, just because I don't have a good memory for that sort of thing, when I swore, or when somebody else swore, somebody who infrequently swears, when they swear, they get attention. I swear a lot in normal life, mostly at things. I kick something and I swear at it. A tool does something doesn't work the way it's supposed to, I swear at it. I get mad at inanimate objects much more than I get mad at human beings. I understand human beings can screw up. A freaking wrench is supposed to work. A screw is supposed to come undone. That kind of stuff really pisses me off. So, you know, I don't do it to offend anybody, but I can't promise not to do it ever again. I could promise not to do it ever again, but I won't promise not to do it ever again, because it's an effective tool to make a point. And that's how I use it. It's punctuation. Think of it as verbal punctuation, you know, so there you go. And to the, somebody wrote, you got to stop talking too much about yourself, so much about, you got to stop this stuff. No, no, I'm not. Everything I say in this show has a point. It eventually rolls around to it, or sometimes it's just for the point of entertainment. When I was, you know, when you think about radio, and I've said this to people a lot, you think about this medium, it's not radio, it's not broadcasting, it's very narrow casting. You have to seek it out to get it. Radio broadcasting is, it's just out there for the world, and people can find it, people can choose to look for it or whatever, whereas this, people, it's a very intimate relationship. You downloaded this show on purpose. You didn't stumble across this show while driving across the country. Well, maybe if you're just surfing podcasts, but you didn't stumble across it on your radio. You knew what you were getting into, or general idea of it. And part of that is the entertainment. And part, and you know, everything has a point one way or another, even the stuff that doesn't seem to have a point. It is just entertainment. I put it this way about Rush Limbaugh, for example, the guy who essentially created, not essentially, who created the medium here that we're using. Rush Limbaugh isn't so wildly popular and successful and has been doing this for 31 years because he has information no one else can get. And then he gives it to you. No, Rush Limbaugh is so wildly popular and successful because he takes the information you can get from anywhere and conveys it in an easily digestible and entertaining way. And so if there is a story that is not directly related to the news of the day, but is amusing and it causes me to go off on a tangent for a couple of minutes, so be it. You'll laugh, you'll learn something. There's a lesson or a laugh, and sometimes both, and all of it. Nothing is just said superfluously to fill time. I could just say, you know what, I'm only doing 40 minutes today, if that was the case. So if you don't like the personal stories, or you don't like it when my daughter comes over to the microphone with her PJ Mask toys, which I'm looking at her now playing with, she's running around with Owlette, there's a fast forward button. You can skip right past it, or you can just tune out or stop or whatever. But this show is the show that I want to do. And I wouldn't do this show if part of the reason that, you know, I do this show this way, I have total control. It's why I'm not rolling in the dough and why I'm not on the payroll and collecting a salary for this. I do this because I love it. And I do it that way because I could, you know, the Daily Caller could pay me for this. It's a lot of work and it's successful. There's an audience, there are sponsors, so on and so forth. I mean, I make some money off of it, but I'm not collecting a salary. It's performance based. I could collect a salary. I could demand a salary, but I know that that would come with strings attached. That would come with requirements that I cite only Daily Caller stories or something like that. Or they want, you know, get an email. This is the story. You need to talk about this story on the show today. Now I have absolute free hand. I can do whatever I want on the program. And I like that. And so I made that active decision to do this show this way, free and completely free. However I want to do it. I've never had anybody say anything to me about you must talk about this or you shan't talk about that. How dare you? Don't have this guest. Don't take this take. Nothing. Frankly, I don't think anybody at the website actually listens to the show, which is fine by me too. But they've never come back and said, hey, you know what? You shouldn't be doing this or you shouldn't be doing that. Because it's not costing them anything. And that is my power. That is my choice. So if I go off on a tangent like I just did just now, it's because there is a point. I like to show you guys behind the curtain so you can see how the sausage is made, so you know what's going on. So you have this intimate relationship. I don't know you. You don't know me because we've probably never hung out. Some of you I do know, and you know, I get those emails too, or I get when I see friends like, oh, I love that show. I know some of you. But there is that weird feeling that you have when you listen to somebody talking as much as I do, especially when they share. There are hosts out there who don't tell you anything about their personal lives. I find that incredibly boring and dry. Then it's like a college lecture where the professor is aloof and standoffish and doesn't want you to know anything, doesn't even want you to know their first name. Just keep your distance. I'm up here. You're down there. I don't want this show to ever be that. I wouldn't listen to that show. This is a show I would listen to. That's the only kind of show I'm willing to do. So to do that, I maintain absolute control by maintaining absolute poverty when it comes to this show. I appreciate all the support from you guys, but if you don't like it and you want to change the show, I don't know what to tell you. Write me a big fat check and then we can talk, or otherwise find another show. I don't want you to, but I'm not going to change the way this show is done and run because I think it's a damn fine show. So there you go. Anyway, let's get on with the news of the day. But first, let's talk about AncientLifeOil.com. Our buddies at AncientLifeOil.com, the finest CBD oil available to human beings, to animals, and plants. It's just the best on the planet. It's 100% organic. It's not loaded with THC. You're not going to get high. This is pure CBD oil that helps your body feel better, relax, get rid of the strain. In my eyes, get rid of that joint ache. You'd be surprised what CBD oil can do. If you go to AncientLifeOil.com, you can find a full list. Just actually, better yet, you're going to think, well, they're trying to sell you something. Of course they're going to say this. Just Google CBD oil benefits. See what other people are saying about CBD oil. Talk to your friends and your family. See what CBD oil has done for them. You'd be surprised who's using CBD oil. Then when you say, hey, wait a second, I'll give this a shot. What do I have to lose? That's when you go to AncientLifeOil.com. Get a supply. Just give it a try one time and enter promo code Derek at checkout for great discounts. You do that. After your first one, you will be a believer. It happened to me. I am not unique. It will happen to you. AncientLifeOil.com, promo code Derek. Great discounts on an amazing product. And you'll kick yourself because you're going, what took me so long to get to this point? Why didn't I try this sooner? Okay, let's talk about the coronavirus, shall we? just briefly, the stock market rebounded a little bit. The stock market is probably not done going down all the way just yet because there could be supply chain issues over the coronavirus and the fact that it is ravaging throughout China. In China, we have the Chinese government's official numbers, and those numbers are cooked. They cook their books. So whatever you're getting out of China, don't believe it. It's a general sense, but like when somebody tells you, I've only slept with 5 people, add a 0 or 10 or whatever. They're lying to you. China lies. They're not going to let on to what's going on over there. But people in general, especially in the first world, the coronavirus is nothing to sneeze at. It's something you've got to take seriously, if only because you don't want to get seriously ill. But it is not the death sentence that people are that the media is portraying it as. During the president's press conference last night, one of the questioners, of course, because journalists are terrible political hacks, rather than deal with the issue at hand, somebody, I don't know who it was, I was listening on the satellite radio because I was driving, asked the president, you said of Barack Obama during Ebola, X, Y, and Z, the president was failing, he should shut down travel, he should do this, that, and the other thing, yet you haven't done all those things when it comes to the coronavirus, so are you a hypocrite, was basically the question. Of course, Ebola is a completely different type of virus from the coronavirus. The coronavirus has a mortality rate of around 2%. Bad, no doubt about it, very bad. Nobody, you know, ideally, the virus mortality rate for every virus would be 0. If we could just, you know, you get the sniffles for a few days and then you recover and go back about your business. But Ebola's kill rate is, you know, over 50% or somewhere close to 50%. It is a devastating virus that just basically disintegrates your body. You're bleeding out of every orifice. Your body is falling apart. Now, you can survive that, but it is very difficult. Treating the coronavirus like Ebola is insane. It's possible to overreact to coronavirus and underreact to Ebola while reacting in a large-scale way to both of them. So to sit there and compare the two and the government's reactions to the two and using Trump's past criticism of Barack Obama about Ebola is absurd. It is absurd. It is ridiculous. It is political hackery to the nth degree, yet the political hackery is what the media does these days. That's where they live. That's who they are. Case in point, when Donald Trump imposed travel restrictions on China, he was decried as a reactionary and a racist by many in the media. China decried it as well, and the media took the side of China. Now, this was just a month ago. Took the side of China. Now, why would they take the side of China? Because China was criticizing Donald Trump. It's that simple. Now that things have gotten more widespread, places like northern Italy seeing a mini outbreak, the very same people that decried the president's actions in the past as racist against Chinese people are complaining that the president is not reacting strongly enough, not acting quickly enough. Donald Trump was right the other day when he requested something in the neighborhood of $2.8 billion to deal with coronavirus readiness, and Chuck Schumer came down and said, no, this is not enough money. We've got to throw more money at the problem. President Trump said, if he'd asked for $10 billion, I'm paraphrasing, but if he would have asked for $10 billion, they would have said that's too much. If he'd asked for what he asked for, they said it's not enough. There is no way that a Democrat would allow this crisis to go to waste. That's the Democrats' mantra, isn't it? It's their controlling force. Never let a good crisis go to waste. So when the Democrats come back and say, we need at least $8 billion. First of all, Chuck Schumer is literally pulling that money out of where he stores his head most of the time. It's made up. Secondly, just think about this rationally. How much money could you possibly spend for coronavirus readiness? What is it that makes the country, the government, ready to deal with a possible pandemic? A possible pandemic. It would be masks. It would be gloves. It would be whatever sort of Purell sort of thing that destroys the virus, whatever it is, whether it's spraying Lysol, whatever, something like that. It would be a lot of that. There is a lot of money is being poured into research to try and come up with a vaccine, and that's great. That's wonderful. It's one of the beauties of science that we can't cure viruses, but we can immunize ourselves to them. We've figured out how to train our immune system to be able to defeat the viruses much more quickly and lessen the impact and certainly the mortality rate. But think of it this way. How many experts do you think there are in the country on this who are capable of doing research? And how many of them do you think right now aren't doing that? That they just, you know, they sit there and they're sitting idle and they go, you know what, I can't do any research because I don't have the money, or I can't do more research. Everybody's only working four-hour days because we don't have enough money to fund this research. The research is fully funded. So if you doubled the research, tripled the research money, what do you do with that money? Where does that money go? Where is the need for money? Where are the idle experts waiting, wishing, hoping, fingers crossed that they will get the funding? I guarantee you the funding is there for the people capable of doing the job. So for Chuck Schumer to come in and say, well, we need more money. Well, we've ordered all the masks that we can. We've ordered all the quarantine facilities or preparedness that there is. If we've got all the bases covered, what do you need more money for? What do you do with more money? More money will not suddenly materialize more of this stuff and more people capable of using this stuff. So where does it go? Of course, it's not necessary. It's absurd. It's politics. This is how government works, sadly, as much as it does work. And this is how the Democratic Party works, in as much as it does work. Whatever Donald Trump does is never enough unless it's too much. The Democrats will complain about it. And part of the complaining has, well, a good chunk of the complaining has trickled down, metastasized into the media coverage of this. The questioning, is the president the right person to be in charge at this moment? Is he capable of it? Is he the right person for the job? He has the job. It is his job. Whether you like it or not, tough. It's his. CNN, Brian Stelter, the human potato, the bucktooth human potato. He has an analysis at CNN's website. The headline, Trump's war on truth takes a dangerous turn as he attacks the media's coronavirus coverage. Yes, the problem, according to the human potato, is that Donald Trump lies so often that it's difficult to believe him for anybody. Americans have difficulty believing Donald Trump because all he does is lie, and that could help spread coronavirus. And now he's attacking the media for their coverage of coronavirus. And of course, in Brian Stelter's virgin world, the media does no wrong. At least the liberal media. They are always right. They are always pure. They are always true. They aren't at all hyping this thing where in the United States there are like 50 cases. All are contained. There haven't been new cases reported for a while. We imported most of our cases because they were Americans from China. And we said, you can come home, but you've got to be quarantined. There have been no fatalities. of the American cases because our medical system, our medical treatment is so good. We can't kill a virus, but we can boost people's immune systems. There are antiviral drugs that can help slow down or prevent the replication of viruses. That's what you get, one virus in you, and then suddenly it's a thousand little virus cells rolling around inside your body. That's how it works. That's what causes you to get sick and feel bad as your immune system fights to destroy them. The media is hyping the hell out of this. You would think it was like the Black Death, where people were dropping dead on the streets. You would think this was the early stages of The Walking Dead. We never got an origin for how the Walking Dead world came to be. Maybe this is it. Maybe it was coronavirus. That's the tone of the media coverage of this thing that has a lower mortality rate than the regular flu. It's not good. Ideally, nobody would die from it, but perspective matters and honesty matters. But perspective doesn't sell newspapers with 24-point font headlines about how there is a coming pandemic around the world. Reality does not get viewers to tune in to your weekend special about the horrors of coronavirus. There are horrors of coronavirus in places that do not have the modern medical facilities and treatments and the best trained doctors in the world, like China. China is a gigantic country. Yes, they have some good medical facilities, mostly located in Beijing because that's where the power center is. The communist dictators in the country where everybody is equal managed to hoard the best for themselves. But in outlying provinces like Wuhan, they probably don't have the equivalent of the Mayo Clinic or Johns Hopkins. Oh, they apparently have a biological weapons factory, but they don't have the best military in the world. So the media is not telling you the whole picture. The president's press conference was, I thought, spot on. Said, treat this like the flu. Not that it is like the flu, but the symptoms are very similar and the way it is contracted is very similar. Wash your hands regularly. There's a good idea at all times, but wash your hands. Make sure you use soap and hot water when you wash your hands. If you go somewhere and somebody's sneezing, move away from them and then go wash your hands again. Avoid people. This is why, you know, CPAC at this time. Every year there's a CPAC plague, like I said, and I've caught it before. There's like a flu. You get 10,000 people together, and some jackass goes, my tickets are non-refundable, so I don't care that I'm running 102 temperature. I'm going to go and watch what is essentially Fox News, but live on stage. It's like a Broadway production of Fox News. It's all the same people. That's kind of why I'm just bored with the whole thing, because I don't watch it on my TV in the convenience of my own home. Why would I watch it in a crowded room full of people who are going to get me sick? But people will go and spread it around. People are stupid. That's just how, well, people are inconsiderate, is what I'll say. Same is true for coronavirus. If you're around somebody, you cough into your hand, you shake hands, you've probably got a virus on your hands. Wash your hands. It washes off. To get into your body, it doesn't burrow through your skin. It gets into your body when you put your finger in your eye because it itches, or you stick your finger up your nose because you've got a weird kink, or you stick your finger in your mouth because you're picking something out of your teeth. Wash your hands. That is 90% of the battle, if not more. And realistically, the symptoms are very similar to the flu. You get a fever. You feel achy. You feel like crap. You might have some respiratory problems. You will have respiratory problems and difficulty with all sorts of things if you have pre-existing conditions. If you are elderly with a depressed immune system, if you are currently getting treatment for something that suppresses your immune system, be smart. It's flu season now. Everybody listening to my voice has lived through a flu season. You know how to deal with it. If you're sick, stay home. It's probably not coronavirus, but if you're sick, stay home just out of consideration. If you come into contact with some bunch of people, even if they're not showing signs, just simply wash your hands. You don't have to have yourself laminated. Wear a mask and a scuba tank so your oxygen you're breathing is 100% pure, unadulterated, uninfested by a virus. It's not the easiest thing to contract, just like the flu, but it isn't that hard to get either. You can avoid it pretty effectively if you're just smart about it. That was the president's message. There's a question about quarantining cities, and the media is trying to hype this thing because it means money in their pockets. That's all there is to it. Money in their pockets, eyeballs on them, and they can partner with the Democrats to try to attack the president of the United States. When he imposed travel restrictions on China, it was racist. Now, why won't he impose stricter travel restrictions? The past doesn't matter to these people. It's about the future. It's about the agenda. That's what they're doing. That's who they are. Take everything you read from them with a grain of salt when your spidey sense is tingling that you're being spun and not informed in news stories. There are plenty of news stories out there that are telling you the truth about it. There are more that are hyping this about it. Be smart. Take care of yourself. No faceless bureaucrat or even anybody working tirelessly in a lab to try and get a vaccine for this thing, try to contain this thing, really honestly cares about you as an individual. That's your job. And the easiest way to do it is to be smart. So there you go. I'm going to jump off my high horse now when it comes to coronavirus and move on to other things. But it had to be addressed. It had to be said. The president said it. The media mocked it. The Democrats attacked it. Elizabeth Warren says she's going to introduce a plan to take all the funding from Donald Trump's racist wall on the southern border and direct that towards coronavirus. To do what with it? What are you going to do? If we ordered every single mask and latex glove to be manufactured in the next 6 months, what do you do then? Where does this money go? Where is the glaring need for money? When you hear your liberal friends talking about we need to do more to fight coronavirus, ask them what we're not doing. They won't know because they don't have any idea what we're actually doing. But to liberals, the answer is always more, unless Republicans answer with more. And then the answer is less. But there's nothing being unfunded. There's no lab sitting idle going, why aren't we getting any funding to go and research on coronavirus? Trust me, a couple of billion dollars in the scheme of government ain't much. But in the scheme of researching one particular virus and how to contain it, and the protocols involved in making sure that there is no contamination and no contagion, no outbreak, those are fully funded. If there's more to be done, Democrats could easily cite these things. They aren't citing it. Have you noticed that? They just talk about more. They just say more. So you can stump them by saying where. Where is there not enough? The answer, well, they won't have an answer to that. But then there is so much to which Democrats have no answer. And we'll get to that in a second. But I just want to do a couple of emails here because you guys have been writing some really good stuff and some good questions. Colleen writes, and she just listened to the Tuesday show. She's one day behind. Get on the ball, Colleen. What are you doing? Back when I was an idiot liberal, I listened to Tom Hartman. She said that Bernie used to point to Venezuela. Bernie was on every Friday for an hour. Brunch with Bernie, she says. I was on Tom Hartman's show on RTV a long time ago. It was when I first started doing TV. It's like the minor leagues. You're sent to like A-ball, and that was the Tom Hartman show on RTV. And Tom Hartman, we'd mix it up. It was a panel. I was always on a panel. They did this show. I don't even know what the hell it was. The Rumble or something like that. And one day we were talking about healthcare, and healthcare is something I know something about because I was a health policy analyst, not at the time, but previous to that time. And he was saying, I mentioned something about how Canadians were, he's talking about, oh, Americans go to Canada to buy their prescription drugs for cheaper. And it's true. People go overseas to buy their drugs for cheaper or out of the country. That's fine. If it's, the problem is when you want to mass re-import drugs, which is essentially backdoor to price controls. The real problem is the price controls imposed in those other countries, not that we don't have them here. But I said, well, yeah, people go there to buy cheaper drugs. That's one thing. But when people are seriously ill, like with cancer, Canadians are actually bused to the United States to get treatment. Now, this is well documented in the media and in research. But Tom denied that, much like Bernie would deny there's any problems in the Cuban healthcare system. But I was insistent because I knew this to be a fact, not only because I had been a health policy analyst and written about this, but because I grew up in Detroit and would see the stories of Canadians coming over on buses being shipped over by their various, well, in this case, it was the province of Ontario because that was just across the river in Detroit. And that was what was happening to them. The wait time was so long that the government begrudgingly had to avoid revolt, had to send people to the United States to get treatment for their cancer. And Tom denied that this ever happened. And so I said, I got to the point in this argument, the other two people were kind of quiet at this point, and I said I'd bet him $1,000 that it was true. And I said, I'll bet you $1,000 if you, and he's like, no, I won't do that. And I said, what's wrong, Tom? You're so right. You're so sure that you're right. This will be the easiest money you ever make in your life. And I put my hand out and said, come on, let's bet $1,000 right now that this happens. And he wouldn't do it. And then I was never invited back on. He seemed like a nice enough guy, but lunatic. God, he's a lunatic. Anyway, back to Colleen's email. Bernie would always talk about how Venezuela was a perfect example of socialism. That was about 15 years ago. Now he doesn't mention Venezuela. Now it's Norway, kind of like he also used to rail against millionaires and billionaires. And now that he's a millionaire, he just rails against billionaires. Oddly, though, the same time he praised Venezuela as a great example of socialism, he's also said he wasn't a socialist, that democratic socialism is nothing like socialism, in that you still get to keep the freedoms and constitution of the U.S. I can't believe I believed him. That's embarrassing. Love your show, blah, blah, blah. Nice interview with Chris. Anyway, me and Chris DeGaul were hilarious, and then she says nice things. Anyway, thank you for that, Colleen. But you're right. Bernie Sanders has changed over time. It is to protect what he used to say, to protect his current self from what he used to say. He doesn't want people to know that he was a big fan of Hugo Chavez, that he thought it was a wonderful thing, that she was wonderful. I'm glad you're now conservative, Colleen. Welcome to the fight. Welcome to sanity. Keep your elbows up. Keep your elbows sharp and make sure that you don't get coronavirus and all of that. Another email here. I'm looking for it, and I might not be able to find it just because I marked it. I read it already, and that's how you kind of screw up these things. Said, this was interesting. I'm not going to use this person's name because I didn't ask their permission, but they know who they are. And the judge, let's see, I believe them because people, he's using terminology and things. And why would anybody lie about this? So just a little info, insider info. It says, I work for a large hospital corporation and order supplies for a small local hospital. We are struggling with getting particulate masks and other supplies. There are back orders for sterile supplies for surgical procedures because most come from China. Not much of this is covered in the media yet. Another scary thing is that most medications we use also come from China. POTUS, President Trump, is right that we need to make things here, but most of all medicines. It's a national security thing. He's absolutely right. And the president has sort of addressed this a little bit. I think there has to be a greater concerted effort on behalf of all elected officials to do this. We actually have the technology. We actually have the expertise. We develop the drugs in this country, and then we produce them overseas, partially because it's cheaper labor-wise, but partially because it's cheaper regulatory-wise as well. Our government can make a major step in cutting the red tape that is involved in chasing manufacturing, medical manufacturing, out of the country. We should be doing that now, as Elizabeth Warren and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi cry and piss and moan about Donald Trump isn't doing the right thing. We need to spend more money. How about we do something that doesn't cost us any money? And that would be to remove the barriers of re-entry, because we used to make this stuff in this country, remove the barriers of re-entry into the manufacture of these goods in this country. We make it cheaper. Even if a company's really freaking rich, we make it cheaper for them to open up plants to manufacture these important necessities in this country. My fear, well, one of my fears, I mean, I do fear that this could turn out to be something much worse. If the virus mutates, for example, and it becomes much worse for the human body with a higher kill percentage, then that would be a big fear. But I fear that we're not going to learn any lessons from this. Much like the flu, since this is so much like the flu, there's a possibility that it could be seasonal. Flu spreads because in winter, it's not like it just sleeps during the summer months and then decides to wake up and start attacking people in the winter. It's because people are indoors. People are clustered together. You don't hang out in parks. You don't go outside with people. You're not having barbecues outside. You're much less likely to catch the flu at a barbecue, unless the person cooking and preparing the food is sick, than you are if you're all inside and having a nice dinner. You're not doing things, you know, you're clustered together. We are clustered together in the winter. That's how it spreads. That's why the flu goes away largely in the summer. That's why there's such a thing as flu season. Flu still exists. You can still get the flu in the summer. It's just rarer because we are outside more. Well, there's a possibility that coronavirus will be like that, that it could go dormant in as spring approaches and it heats up and people will spend more time outside, dispersed, things like that. And I fear that we'll just kind of go, all right, moving on. You know, as a society, as a government, all right, moving on is what happens all too often. The underlying problems that were exposed, and hopefully, I mean, I do hope that the coronavirus goes away because of the seasonal change and the behavior of human beings that change. But the underlying problems that aren't really in place that much, although this person does say that they're having trouble getting these things, the underlying problems that this outbreak have exposed don't go away just because the virus did. There will be another virus. There is always another virus. That is the nature of nature. If we don't take this opportunity to fully embrace what is necessary for a possible pandemic, and one of those things is incentivizing the manufacture of medical necessities and medicine here back in the United States, then this will have been a complete exercise in masturbation. Simple as that. Just because it doesn't turn into a massive outbreak doesn't mean we don't prepare. And the best way to prepare is to become self-sufficient in our medical needs. So hopefully this guy is wrong, and or this guy exposes something that that we can work on. You want to do something with all that money Democrats want to throw around, this would be a good place to start. Okay, I want to get to this Ben Sasse audio because it's so well done. He was on the floor of the Senate yesterday talking about his bill to require doctors to provide care to infants who survive an attempted abortion, or as CNN put it, a fetus that survives. They call it a fetus that was born. Like, honest to God, who, what kind of freak of nature thinks up that sentence? Well, in defense of that bill that he proposed, Ben Sasse went at the critics of the bill. He used Dick Durbin, the most appropriately named man in the United States Senate, to do it. Dick Durbin was vehemently opposed to this. Now, a rational human being, upon hearing, Dick Durbin was saying that this was impacting a woman's right to choose, so on and so forth. Ben Sasse destroys that. A rational human being who was being intellectually honest, even if they believed what Dick Durbin was saying before he was saying it, would have to admit that they were wrong upon hearing Ben Sasse's answer. Dick Durbin did no such thing, and he voted with Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Amy Klobuchar, and 40 other Democrats, or 44 Democrats in total, who voted to filibuster this bill that would require medical attention to babies that survive an abortion. Listen to Ben Sasse rationally and calmly decimate the left on this bill.
You said you're not questioning my sincerity. I appreciate that. You asked that I would not be questioning your sincerity. I'm not, but I am questioning your logic, because you summarized it as if there are two issues at play. And you said anti-abortion legislation and maternal health funding. There are three issues at play on the floor today. One of them is Lindsey Graham's Pain Capable Bill, which is a pro-life piece of legislation. One of them is Senator Durbin's funding requests about maternal delivery health. Those things are true, but there is a third thing, which yet again you obscured by saying the debate here is funding maternal health or having anti-abortion legislation. The piece of legislation we're voting on today, the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, is not about abortion. I am pro-life. I'm going to support Lindsey Graham's bill, but the bill we're voting on doesn't change anyone's access to abortion. It doesn't have anything to do with Roe v. Wade. It is about babies that are already born. CNN said this morning on TV, they made up this insane phrase. They said, a fetus that has been born. The heck is that? It's another way of saying they don't want to debate the actual debate we're having on the floor today. The debate we're having, we're going to vote once on Lindsey Graham's pro-life legislation. I'm going to support it. But we're also going to vote on a piece of legislation that is about the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. These are about babies that are born that are outside their mother. And what's actually happening is the senior senator from Illinois is wanting to obscure the debate because he wants to use euphemisms about choice so that you don't have to admit to the American public that what's actually happening in the floor today is probably that, like last year, 44 Democrats are going to filibuster an anti-infanticide bill. There's nothing in the bill that's about abortion. Nothing. It's about infanticide. That's the actual legislation. And you got 44 people over there who want to hide from it and talk in euphemisms about abortion because they don't want to defend the indefensible, because you can't defend the indefensible. We're talking about killing babies that are born. That's the actual legislation we're voting on today in the Senate. That's what the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act is. Is it okay in the eyes of the United States Senate for us to say, well, you can't actively kill the little baby? You can't take a pillow and put it over her face and smother her to death, but you can back away and kill her that way. That's what Ralph Northam, the disgraced governor of Virginia, was talking about when he said, well, once the baby's born, if she survives an abortion, we wish that hadn't happened, we'll figure out a way to keep her calm for a little while the doctors debate what they want to do. What he means is kill the baby. That's the legislation we're voting on today. There are three buckets. Lindsey Graham's Born Pain Capable Act, that's a bill about abortion. There's another bill that is about babies that have already been born. Newsflash, CNN, if you're a baby and you've been born and you're outside of mama, nobody calls that a fetus. You just want to call it a fetus because you don't want to cover the actual story that's being voted on in the U.S. Senate today. Then there's a third piece of legislation, which is Senator Durbin's counterproposal today about maternal preventable deaths and investment in that case, that category. I'm interested in that category as well, but you don't actually want to talk about the legislation that's on the floor, so you're changing the subject. Therefore, I object.
Dick Durbin was unable to sit down for the rest of the day and likely the rest of the year after his ass kicking that he just took right there from Ben Sasse. I'm not the biggest Ben Sasse fan. Ben Sasse is a great concept. And when it comes to giving speeches, he's very good at that. He's been less than effective when it comes to legislating on this one. He had a good piece of legislation, a great piece of legislation. The Democrats love to talk about who we are as a country. That's not who we are as a country. The Republicans probably should have used that argument against the Democrats. You know, you have a newborn baby sitting there that survived an abortion, and Democrats want it to die. They want to empower doctors, nay, require doctors, to let it die because it was supposed to be aborted. Is that what Democrats want this country to be? Because that is not who we are as a nation. That would have been a very powerful use of that argument against Democrats. It still wouldn't have gotten coverage. It was largely ignored, this story, by the mainstream media to the extent that they covered it. It was described, as Ben Sasse was talking about, as an anti-abortion bill, even though it has nothing to do with abortion. The baby's born. The baby survived. The baby's outside. But they can't ever be honest. Honesty does not help a Democrat's argument, so they just won't be honest. I wanted to play that because I thought it was a really powerful speech and so well done and so effectively exposed what the left is in this country now, what they've become in this country. You can find that on social media, and if you want to post that on your Facebook page and your Twitter account, that would be good because I think more people should see that. Finally today, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she went down to the floor of the United States House of Representatives yesterday to talk about the Green New Deal, whining and complaining about how bad the coverage of the Green New Deal is and how people are just too stupid to understand it, particularly Republicans. And so she decided to read large passages of it and talk about passages of it and talk about what it means. Grabian Media put together a little montage of it. It's quite good. Listen closely. You'll hear very few things that have any direct correlation whatsoever to the environment and to environmentalism. That's not by accident. We know that the environmental movement and climate change is a delivery device for left-wing political fever dreams. That is it. The public rejected these policies over and over and over again. We fought a Cold War and won a Cold War to reject these very same policies. So Democrats change tactics. It's now not that you just want socialism. It's that it is a moral imperative to have socialism and communism, because otherwise you're killing the planet. Do you want to kill the planet? It's a hell of an argument. It's a hell of a frame job. It's a lie. But AOC... listen to what she talks about. She talks about jobs. She talks about justice. She talks about everything under the sun except lowering CO2 emissions, which I thought was the root of our own destruction. Here she is.
As we've discussed the Green New Deal, I've noticed that there's been an awful lot of misinformation. So I have decided that since my colleagues could not, for some reason, read the resolution, that perhaps this hour would be spent best reading it to them, providing resources, training, and high-quality education, including higher education, to all people of the United States, and ensure prosperity and economic security for all people in the United States, ensuring a commercial environment where every business person is free from unfair competition and domination by domestic or international monopolies, guaranteeing universal access to clean water, strengthening and protecting the right of all workers to organize, unionize, and collectively bargain free of coercion, intimidation, and harassment, building a more sustainable food system that ensures universal access to healthy food, meeting 100% of the power demand in the United States through clean, renewable, and zero-emission energy sources, and ensuring affordable access to electricity, guaranteeing a job with a family-sustaining wage, adequate family and medical leave, paid vacations, and retirement security to all people of the United States. Promote justice and equity by stopping current, preventing future, and repairing historic oppression of indigenous peoples, communities of color, migrant communities, deindustrialized communities, depopulated rural communities, the poor, low-income workers, women, the elderly, the unhoused, people with disabilities, upgrading all existing buildings in the United States and building new buildings to achieve maximum energy efficiency, water efficiency, safety, affordability, comfort, and durability, including through electrification, by supporting family farming, and providing all people of the United States with high-quality health care, affordable, safe, and adequate housing, economic security, and clean water, clean air, healthy and affordable food, and access to nature. I humbly ask our country to care for our planet. Thank you very much, and I yield.
This is crazy, okay? That is the Green New Deal. She was reading from the Green New Deal. Where was the concern for the planet? Where was the environmentalism? Where is the getting rid of CO2? Retrofitting every building in the country to make them affordable. Yeah, go ahead and drop $5 million into retrofitting your building so that we can impose lower rent control prices. Like, nothing she says makes sense outside of the old Soviet Union, maybe Castro's Cuba, maybe North Korea, but in reality, she's got a background in economics, she says. You can see now why, with her degree in economics, she was only qualified to be a bartender in Manhattan, because she's as dumb as a brick, with apologies to bricks. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening, telling a friend, and all that good stuff. Lots of rambling today because I've been running around and running a whole bunch of audio. We'll be back tomorrow, the interview edition, Yuval Levin. We have a very, very interesting discussion I believe you will enjoy. And if anything else major happens, we'll sum it up before we get to the interview tomorrow. Otherwise, it's almost Friday, baby. I'll see you then.
Promote justice and equity by stopping current, preventing future, and repairing historic oppression of indigenous peoples, communities of color, migrant communities, deindustrialized communities, depopulated rural communities, the poor, low-income workers, women, the elderly, the unhoused, people with disabilities.